This is VOA News. I'm Liz Pelka. Russia's UN ambassador, Vasily Nebenzia, says Russia will carry out a ceasefire on Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. Moscow time. Nebenzia says Russia will open humanitarian corridors to evacuate citizens from Kyiv, Chernigov, Sumy, and Mariupol. He took the floor at the end of a UN Security Council meeting on the humanitarian crisis in Ukraine on Monday to make the announcement. He also said the proposal doesn't have any demands about civilians being sent to Russia or into Russian territory. Prior to that, President Volodymyr Zelensky said instead of an agreement on humanitarian corridors, what Ukraine got on Monday was Russian tanks, Russian Grad rockets, Russian mines. Zelensky said in what has become a daily video address close to midnight, they even mined the roads that were the agreed upon routes for taking food and medicine to the people, to the children of Mariupol. On Monday night, he spoke from behind his ornate desk in his official office, visual proof that he remains in Kyiv. U.S. Ambassador Linda Thomas-Greenfield also spoke at the United Nations on Monday. She says Russia should be condemned for its attack on Ukraine and the humanitarian crisis that has now unfolded.
We're outraged by increased reports of Moscow's attacks harming Ukrainian civilians in its unprovoked and unjustified war against the Ukrainian people.
Undersecretary General Martin Griffiths told the council that places like Mariupol, Kharkiv, and Metropol are in desperate need of aid. We're following this story closely on voanews.com. Go there for the latest. This is VOA News. European Parliament President Roberta Metsola pleaded for Russia to free all those unjustly jailed for protesting the invasion of Ukraine and to stop intimidating protesters. Metsola told the European Parliament that there were reports of more than 13,000 people in 147 Russian cities being held for speaking against the invasion, with 4,500 people detained on Sunday alone. In remarks, Metsola says the world has had enough of Russian President Vladimir Putin's world.
Our outrage grows with every shell that is fired, as does the Ukrainian defiance and our people's solidarity.
She praised Russian citizens for standing up to Putin under the toughest of conditions. A Guantanamo prisoner who was allegedly turned away before he could join the 9/11 hijackers is headed back to Saudi Arabia. AP correspondent Jennifer King reports.
The Defense Department says Mohammed Ahmad al-Qahtani was flown back to Saudi Arabia after 20 years in custody at the U.S. military base in Cuba. A review board concluded he could be safely repatriated. His lawyers say the 46-year-old prisoner will receive treatment for mental illness in his home country. In August of 2001, al-Qahtani was turned away at the Orlando airport by suspicious immigration officers. According to previously released documents, September 11th hijacker Mohammed Atta was supposed to pick him up so he could take part in the deadliest terror attack in U.S. history. He was later captured by U.S. forces in Afghanistan. The U.S. dropped plans to try him after the Pentagon legal official in charge of war crimes commissions concluded he had been tortured at the base. Only about half of the 38 prisoners left have been cleared for release. President Biden has said he intends to close the facility. Jennifer King, Washington.
Germany is preparing to receive seriously injured civilians and soldiers from Ukraine, as well as patients who have to be transferred from Ukrainian hospitals that have been bombed. That's according to German Health Minister Karl Lauterbach on Monday. Lauterbach pointed out during a news conference that Germany has a strong healthcare system. He added, "We showed that during the crisis. Now we must use this strength again." The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention urged Americans to avoid travel to Hong Kong, New Zealand, and Thailand over COVID-19 cases on Monday. The CDC elevated its travel recommendation to level 4, very high, for those three destinations. In total, the CDC urges Americans to avoid travel to about 135 countries and territories. Via remote, I'm Liz Pelka. VOA News.
Today is Tuesday, March 8th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinero Afo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, the Pentagon sends more weapons to Ukraine as the humanitarian crisis deepens amid intensified Russian bombing.
Security assistance from the U.S. and from 14 other countries has continued to be sent in, shipped into Ukraine, including over the past several days.
More than 1.5 million people flee the fighting in Ukraine to neighboring countries.
A surreal soundtrack greets the sea of humanity fleeing Ukraine, a pianist with a message of peace.
And poor Afghans sell their babies in the face of acute hunger and malnutrition. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. The humanitarian crisis in Ukraine is deepening as Russian forces intensify their shelling and food, water, heat and medicine grow increasingly scarce. Ukraine says it is facing a medieval-style siege by Moscow to batter it into submission. A third round of talks between the two sides Monday ended with a top Ukrainian official saying there had been minor, unspecified progress towards establishing safe corridors that would allow civilians to escape the fighting. Russia's top negotiator says he expects those corridors to finally start functioning Tuesday. This as Ukraine renewed calls for additional lethal weapons from Washington and the West as its forces continue to resist the Russian advance. For more, I spoke with VOA's national security correspondent Jeff Selden.
The senior defense official said earlier on Monday that security assistance from the U.S. and from 14 other countries has continued to be sent in, shipped into Ukraine, including over the past several days. The official said these shipments have not stopped. Other officials have talked about this assistance, which includes things like Javelin missiles, which are good for the Ukrainians to combat Russian tanks, also Stinger missiles, which can be used for air defense. And so those types of supplies, ammunition, other types of capabilities continue to flow in. They flow in by ground. Pentagon officials have said, given the situation in the airspace over Ukraine still being contested, it is not safe to try to ship in deliveries by air. But they say the deliveries are continuing and that they plan to continue to look for ways to continue to supply Ukraine and its militaries with the capabilities it needs to defend itself against the Russian invasion.
What is the Pentagon's assessment of the invasion so far?
The Pentagon says that the Russians still appear to be behind schedule, at least to what defense officials can determine the Russians believed their schedule should be. The Russians have bogged down largely in the north. Their large convoy that was meant to resupply troops, according to senior defense officials, in the area around Kyiv, as the Russians moved on the capital of Kyiv, that has bogged down, appears to have made little progress, they say, over the last several days. Last report, that convoy and the advance guard of Russian troops heading toward Kyiv were still about 25 kilometers from the city center. There's still heavy fighting in Kharkiv, another key city in the north, and cities like Mariupol, which are under heavy bombardment, still holding out against Russian forces. Russian forces did take a city in the south, Kherson, but other areas, there's still a lot of combat. And the Pentagon says that it is not seeing the type of coordination they would have expected beforehand, before the invasion began. The Pentagon says the Russians appear to be frustrated.
And there are reports that the Russians are relying on more than just lethal power and weapons in their attempt to overwhelm Ukraine resistance.
Part of the Russian playbook has always been what's been described as a hybrid war, or often involves information campaigns, the spreading of disinformation and influence operations. But VOA has talked to a number of current and former officials and also companies and analysts that track Russian disinformation. And while Russia was dominating the information space in the days and weeks leading up to the invasion, starting with the day of the invasion, that has shifted. The Russian narrative, the stories, the posts they've put on social media have simply been overwhelmed by regular Western media and by counter campaigns by Ukraine and other Western officials. And so Russia is now shifting its strategy a little bit, trying to rely more on social media influencers, people who have views that are sympathetic to the narrative that Russia is putting out there.
That's VOA's national security correspondent Jeff Selden speaking with me from the Pentagon. Ukraine remains under attack from Russian forces waging war on orders from Russian President Vladimir Putin. Steadily increasing Western sanctions have so far failed to deter Russia's aggression as evacuation efforts in Ukraine stall because of the indiscriminate bombing of civilian infrastructure. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has the story.
Evacuation efforts in Ukraine's port city of Mariupol stall for a second straight day amid continued shelling by Russian forces. This despite a ceasefire announcement by the Russian Defense Ministry. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky has appealed so far unsuccessfully for establishing a no-fly zone over Ukraine, a call Western powers reject. Russian forces continue pounding civilian and residential infrastructure with shelling in Ukrainian cities. Western powers, meanwhile, continue increasing sanctions on Russian President Vladimir Putin and those closest to him, sending tumbling the value of the Russian ruble. Putin called sanctions a declaration of war as he himself wages one on his neighbor. And while the Russian Defense Ministry released unverified images claiming to show a drone strike on Ukrainian military positions while Russian tanks roll through unidentifiable wooded areas, the mayor of Ukraine's capital, Kyiv, says Ukrainians will fight for their country's life, but that the fight is bigger than Ukraine. Thousands of Ukrainians in cars on the outskirts of the capital line up to evacuate, with some placing signs in their car windows reading children and evacuation. But Ukrainians fight on. As Ukrainian armed forces, many of whom were civilians just weeks ago, prepare for Russian advances on Kyiv, the West seems prepared to continue material support, stopping short of military engagement with Russia. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
More than 1.5 million people have fled Ukraine to neighboring countries since the Russian invasion, making it Europe's fastest-growing refugee crisis since World War II. Henry Ridgewell reports from the town of Shemushil on the Poland-Ukrainian border.
A surreal soundtrack greets the sea of humanity fleeing Ukraine, a pianist with a message of peace. A momentary distraction from the misery unleashed by Russia's invasion. More than 1 million Ukrainians have fled to Poland since the invasion, by far the highest of any country. And they have been largely embraced by their European neighbours. Most new arrivals are bused to reception centres away from the frontier. Some have family or friends in Poland where they can stay. But many have nowhere to go. They are given beds in shelters like this one, a school in the nearby town of Shemushil, now entirely given over to refugees. It is remarkable how efficiently Poland has managed to absorb the huge number of refugees arriving over its borders so far. The question is how long that can continue, as tens of thousands of refugees continue to arrive every day. Yevgenia has just arrived here with three of her four children. My husband is in Ukraine, she says. They didn't let him leave. And also my older son. He's 18. He also had to sign up to the army. So we're separated. Volunteers come to us and offer us opportunities where we can go, where there is work. We want to work so we're not dependent on someone else, so we can be useful for something. The school's head teacher, Malgorzata Zioba, oversees the shelter and now has hundreds of refugees under her care. Next door, a cultural centre has been transformed into a temporary shelter. They have been overwhelmed with donations from local residents and businesses. Henry Ridgewell, for VOA News, Shemushil, Poland.
UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Michelle Bachelet, warns growing repression in Nicaragua is shutting down fundamental freedoms in the country and is creating a political, social and human rights crisis. Bachelet submitted her latest report on the situation in Nicaragua to the UN Human Rights Council Monday. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The UN High Commissioner gave a blistering account of a Nicaraguan society she says has no respect for human rights nor for the rule of law. In the report submitted Monday, she expressed concern by the continued failure to ensure accountability for human rights violations committed since April 2018. Michelle Bachelet urged the government to repeal a series of legislation passed since then, which unduly restricted the civic and democratic space in which people can operate. For example, the country's special law on cybercrimes punishes alleged crimes committed in the use of information and communication technologies. The report documents many actions by Nicaraguan President Daniel Ortega's government aimed at controlling and prosecuting dissidents and political opponents. Bachelet noted at least 43 people arrested in the context of last November's presidential elections remain detained. She said they are held in inhumane conditions and stripped of their legal rights. She spoke through an interpreter.
Contact with their lawyers has been unduly restricted, which has prevented them from preparing their defense. They have also been deprived of any contact or communication with their children who are minors. Likewise, I observe with deep concern the recent resumption of the trials against some of these men and women in the past month and the harsh prison sentences applied to at least 34 persons without respecting due process.
Bachelet said human rights defenders, journalists, and lawyers continue to be harassed, intimidated, and arbitrarily detained. She said Nicaragua's indigenous people continue to suffer violent attacks over land disputes, most of them in complete impunity.
The fear that exists of repressive actions by the authorities as a response to the exercise of fundamental freedoms is deeply harmful for the human rights of the Nicaraguan people. Nicaraguans continue to seek decent lives and safe lives outside their country.
She noted that 144,000 Nicaraguans left their country last year, the highest number since 2018. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Beheadings, abductions, and entire villages razed. These are the stories told by Mozambicans displaced by attacks from Islamic State-linked militants in northern Cabo Delgado province. The four-year conflict has left nearly 4,000 people dead and displaced 800,000, half the province's population. Rwandan and southern African troops have raised hopes for an end to the conflict. Kate Butler reports from Mutapuez, Mozambique.
Nine-year-old Rahima Musa is quiet and withdrawn amid the other boisterous children at this rural school in Montepeche in northern Mozambique's Cabo Delgado province. Musa and her mother fled here last year after masked gunmen came to their town of Mozamboya de Praia and began killing people, including her brother. They are some of the more than 4,000 people living in the Nikuapa camp after fleeing Islamist insurgents. Kilin Otieno is Chief Operating Officer with Joint Aid Management, JAM, an African aid and development group that is helping the displaced.
We are faced by thousands, hundreds of thousands of IDPs, internally displaced persons, who are victims of conflict around the Cabo Delgado province, especially from the areas of Machibo de Praia and Mueda, where insurgents have actually attacked and driven out thousands of people, most of them being children.
The displaced in Nikuapa camp tell brutal stories of how the Islamic State-linked militants attacked their villages and murdered their relatives. 62-year-old Zara Alifa Asumane says 2 years ago in Mozamboya de Praia, the militants killed her sister, cut off her tongue, and placed her decapitated head at the family's front door. Asumani's young nephew witnessed his mother's killing from where he was hiding under the bed, but the militants discovered him and took him. He's never been found. 57-year-old Isa Pedro's 16-year-old daughter was also abducted as they fled in an attack on the town and was never seen again. Aid group JAMS Otieno says their stories are all too common.
The amount of abuse, the amount of suffering, human suffering, is devastating. We are hearing stories of women who have been abducted, raped. We are hearing stories of children who have been forced into the war and girls who are missing.
Like many in Nikuapa camp, 32-year-old Isa Amir says he doesn't understand why self-declared Muslims are killing other Muslims in the north of this mainly Christian country. Amir says even some of his friends and family have joined the militants. He says when the militants in 2019 came to Mozamboya de Praia, they said we'd better leave because when they came back, they would kill everyone. When they did attack, says Amir, many people were killed. Kate Bartlett for VOA News, Montepeche, Mozambique.
In other news, the United States and 10 countries are condemning North Korea's latest ballistic missile launch and urging the U.S. Security Council to take action. The city council's inaction erodes the credibility of the UN's most powerful body and undermines global efforts to prevent the proliferation of nuclear weapons. U.S. Ambassador Linda Thomas-Greenfield read a statement from 11 countries after a closed Security Council briefing on North Korea's 11th ballistic missile launch since the beginning of the year on Saturday. The 11 countries said they remain open to diplomacy, but North Korea instead has increased missile launches. For more on this story and other breaking news, visit our website at voanews.com. Remember to connect with us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Search for VOA Africa. You are listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. Today is International Women's Day, and the United Nations says this year's observance is, quote, in recognition and celebration of the women and girls who are leading the charge on climate change adaptation and response, and to honor their leadership and contribution towards sustainable future, unquote. As Ghana joins the rest of the world in commemorating the day, a musician based in Ghana is calling for a change in how the creative arts industry is perceived across Africa. According to a report from UNESCO, creative industries account for more than 30 million jobs globally, employing more young people aged 15 to 29 worldwide than any other sector. Mavis Okiari in Juaso in the Ashanti region of Ghana has more on the story.
According to the World Bank, revenue in Africa from the streaming of digital music is expected to reach $500 million by 2025, up from $100 million in 2017. Ghanaian singer Noella Wiala is called the Lioness of Africa for her energetic performances, mostly on stage, and for the way her voice soars over the instruments that accompany her. She recounts how the name came about. At one time, she was singing a Tina Turner song and strike a certain note, which is quite hard for a lot of musicians to hit. When she got to the bridge, she sang it, exceeded and expanded the song, and tried to make it bigger. One critic called it a nice role, and that day her manager indicated it was because of this she is called a lioness. She says African women should believe in themselves, noting that low self-esteem affects many women, no matter what their field of endeavor. She says many struggle to manage their affairs and are often reluctant to embrace new technologies and opportunities. Riala says women need to change their negative perceptions about women in the creative arts, noting that in the early days of her career, she was nearly discouraged from venturing into music.
That was the time it was not easy for some of us. So when I started trying to sing, I was discouraged a lot. They told me that it was only prostitutes that did music, because all the music they saw on TV then, a lot of them came on stage and they were wearing almost nothing. And I think it was partly the reason why the African community used to be against women singing.
She says staying abreast of the challenges women in the creative industry go through, she has sought to be a mentor to young girls and boys who would love to venture into music. Riella, who designs and sews her unique stage costume, says she is now mentoring some young girls in her community to make their own stage costumes, learn to play instruments, and make and edit music videos, and also teach them how to perform on stage. She described the early days of her career when it took a while for people in Ghana and Africa to embrace her music. She says that taught her a lot and made her work hard. Today, her music is embraced across the world. She says to end bias against them, women artists should learn to do things by themselves and not to be too dependent on others.
A lot of the things I do now, I do it on my own. I shoot my own music videos. I edit them myself. Because at the end of the day, we have the internet, we have the equipment, we have the facilities, and we'll be fine.
She says women musicians in Africa can establish and manage their own record labels so they can be of support to each other in a male-dominated area, which at times has a lot of bullying and harassing of women. She says although the COVID-19 pandemic has greatly impacted her career, as with the cancellation of nearly 50 shows, she has redirected her focus to executing projects to support her community. Reporting for VOA, this is Mavis Autry in Jaso in the Ashanti region of Ghana.
One in three Afghans is going hungry these days. Children are facing acute malnutrition. VOA's Aisha Tanzim reports that poor Afghans are resorting to desperate measures, like selling one child to save the others.
Busy playing with her friends, little Sadiqa is unaware that her future has been sealed. Her parents have sold her for around $2,000 to an Afghan working abroad. She is not alone. Most of the girls the VOA team met in camp, and they all look like they're under 10 years old, are either already sold to a buyer or their parents are looking for a buyer. When asked why these parents sell their daughters, one man, Abdulaziz, loses his temper.
We give our kids sleeping pills because they cry and ask for food. We had a life once. We were rich. Then the drought came. War killed our young men. We escaped Faryab province to come to Herat. Since this new government came into power, God knows, one sack of wheat has gone up to $25. How do we buy it? We've been living like this for 3 years.
The parents say they sell one child to save all the others from starvation. War and a prolonged drought had already devastated Afghanistan. The country's economy depended heavily on foreign funding. When the Taliban took over the country militarily last August, international financial support to the country ended. The subsequent collapse of the Afghan economy exacerbated financial woes. 90% of Afghans now make less than $2 a day. Nearly half the country's population is facing acute hunger. 1 million children face acute malnutrition. Her desperate situation makes Shirina angry. She throws a sack of trash on the floor and starts yelling.
We have no money for medicines, no food for our children. In this terrible cold, we are living on these rocks. There is no fire to warm us. My son has just brought this trash. We might earn 5 or 10 cents from it. That is what we are worth.
Sadiqa's father says his daughter is supposed to marry the son of the buyer once she becomes a teenager. But he acknowledges that once sold, the buyer controls her life. He can sell her to someone else.
She is young. She doesn't know anything. Now she belongs to them. They can do with her as they please. We did it because we had no choice. We don't know what's in her future.
Even as he talks to us, the people surrounding us start interrupting. We have nothing. What are we supposed to do? They ask. Then one woman, sounding angry and desperate, tells us, we sell our children like animals. Aisha Tanzeem, VOA News, Herat, Afghanistan.
This is Science in a Minute.
The International Space Station has long been a symbol of mutual cooperation between partners within its 15-nation organization. However, with tensions raised between Western nations and Russia following Russia's invasion of Ukraine, many have expressed concern about the current and future operations of the space station. Reuters recently reported that Dmitry Rogozin, Director General of the Russian space agency Roscosmos, suggested in a series of Twitter tweets that sanctions imposed by the U.S. could destroy U.S.-Russian teamwork on the International Space Station. NASA Administrator Bill Nelson recently remarked that, quote, NASA continues the working relationship with all our international partners to ensure their safety and the ongoing safe operations of the ISS, end quote. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Go beyond the daily headlines with VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. Each weekday at 2105 UTC, join me, Steve Miller, as I put the latest developments into a global context with interviews and analysis. Listen online at voanews.com/flashpoint or in your favorite podcast player.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voanews.com. Until next time, I am Gene Roffa in Washington, wishing you a great day.